So good afternoon and welcome to this session, Overview of Business Intelligence in Microsoft Office and SharePoint 2013. This is very much a BI topic focused on the business user. It's a favorite topic of mine because being an IT professional, I like the idea of being able to push back to the business, to those that know their data best, that know the results that they're looking for, to empower them with the correct tools, appropriate permissions to data, and some training doesn't go amiss, and then enabling them to go ahead and produce their own solution with some oversight from IT. And that's what we're here to discuss in this session this afternoon. So my name is Peter Myers, I'm an external speaker. Very happy to be back here for TechEd. I think this is the sixth year in North America that I've been presenting. I come with about 12 years experience working with Microsoft Business Intelligence, focusing on SQL Server and Office and SharePoint. And I've been recognized for my community contributions as a SQL Server Most Valued Professional. There's a little bit of an accent going on. I am Australian. I've just come across from Melbourne yesterday. And should there be any need to contact me about this presentation, of course, you're welcome to ask questions if there's time during the session, if not afterwards. We have the benefit that this is the last session of the day, so I'll hang around as long as it takes. Otherwise, if you download this presentation later, you have any questions, this is how you can contact me. All right, so the session objectives for this 75-minute presentation is to just start by setting the scene. What is self-service business intelligence? Why is it relevant and probably important to you? We'll then introduce what Microsoft can deliver. I think a good starting point is to talk about Microsoft's BI strategy and vision. It sets the scene, allows me then to introduce the frameworks and the products that we have to build solutions upon. Essentially, that will be Office 2013 and SharePoint 2013. A note that much of what I present is still relevant to the earlier versions, whether it's Office 2010 or SharePoint 2010. Okay, so here's our outline. Let's get into it. My thought on this, because there's a lot to cover when it comes to Office and its capabilities for business intelligence, that I could give you death by PowerPoint. I've got a feeling that's not a great way to end the day, or even start a day. Where a picture can tell 1,000 words, I think a demonstration can tell 1,000,000 words. So what you'll find is that while I have some valuable content in the slides here, and they do get very wordy, is that I am going to work through them fairly quickly. But during the demonstrations, and I have many of them in this 75-minute session, I will be covering that material and reinforcing it. So what I see is that the slides, the content is something you can review afterwards. You'll have it delivered to you dry demonstrations here in this session. I'll just call out the main points here, that self-service business intelligence is about empowering those individuals that need answers from their data. They could come and knock on your door at IT, and commonly the answer is that we don't have time, it's not a priority, you'll just have to wait. But there's important decisions that can't wait. And so what you'll find is whether you empower them or not, they will find a way, using Access Excel in a supported way or an unsupported way, to get to the data and the answers that they need. So really, we see self-service business intelligence as a cooperation for mutual benefit between IT and the business users that have these needs. When managed appropriately, it's invaluable to both IT and to the business itself. And you'll see here in this session this afternoon that Office 2013 and SharePoint 2013 working together provide a major role in delivering self-service BI. Microsoft's strategy and vision, ever since I've been presenting on these topics, I've used this same slide, it really hasn't changed. It's about delivering products that in turn deliver insight to everyone in the organization, allowing them to make better, faster, and more relevant decisions. Microsoft delivers SQL Server as a data platform, Office as a productivity platform, and SharePoint for collaboration. So from an end-user point of view, you'll see that there's heavy investment made for self-service BI in Excel, and for the IT professional, continuation of the enterprise-grade support, leading into governance. Governance is where IT can have some visibility and control over what is happening in the self-service arena to ensure that it doesn't get out of control. Now, we don't really attend to that topic this afternoon. I'm really focusing on the end user with self-service BI and Office and SharePoint. There was a great session today on governance for BI with SharePoint, and that would be a complementary session to what I'm covering here today. Right, so starting with Office 2013, there's two notable products. Excel is the major product that allows us to realize that BI vision, and we'll see today also that Visio has a minor role in delivering through visualization, value from your data. So let's start with Excel. This is perhaps the most installed and used application on the planet. Microsoft estimate there's 1 billion installations of Office, and then they estimate there's 600 million active users for Excel. Beyond its core spreadsheeting capabilities, there are numerous and often hidden capabilities that people aren't aware of. And these abilities allow us to work with data, to connect, retrieve, transform, prepare, optimize through data models, and then visualization on top of this through different interactive and rich experiences, through charting, pivot tables, and so on. We'll explore all of them this afternoon. So it can be considered to be a complete and powerful tool to access data, to cleanse, mash up, bring together, explore, visualize, and share. So essentially, for these three capabilities, we have Data Explorer. Has anyone heard of Data Explorer? Who has, by show of hands? Okay, I count about 17, maybe about 10% of the audience. It's a new add-in. It's currently in preview. I'll be demonstrating it this afternoon, but it's a powerful way and an easier way to access different data and to prepare it often or possibly in sophisticated ways before you start to use it to report from. Flash Fill is a new capability built into Excel 2013. Data Model is now a core component of Excel, whether it's in the background or explicitly accessed through Power Pivot. This ability to create a data model that provides an intuitive, efficient, especially over large volumes of data. A data model is an experience, it's a resource that is embedded into the workbook that allows us to produce reporting and visualization experiences. Apps for Office are new in Office 2013. We'll see today how you can leverage them in Excel 2013. So this opens up the potential for you to go ahead and download or acquire from the Office store new visualizations. Some of them are free, there's good news there. Some of them you might pay for. And this extends Excel beyond its native capabilities to work with other experiences. For visualization exploring, quick analysis, quick explore, there are some convenient, what do we used to call them? You'll see them as a sort of little tags that pop up that allow you then to perform actions across data. These are new in Excel 2013. PowerView was also added in Excel 2013 as a new reporting tool, the ability to work off tabular BI semantic models and to richly express and interact with that data. Geoflow, I think this was part of the keynote this morning, is that correct? Very impressive when you have spatial data and you want to animate it in three dimensions. This is the new add-in that you'll have available to you. So it also, as is Data Explorer, it's in preview. Now, when you've produced this fantastic experience inside Excel, consisting of data and reports and visualizations, when it comes to sharing it, you could do the old-fashioned approach, and that would be, let's just attach it to an email and send it to somebody. This isn't a preferred approach from IT. I mean, we certainly start to lose control as to where that document potentially goes. But also, there's other permission issues, that someone that has access to the entire workbook has access to the data model definition, potentially connection string details, and so on. A more appropriate form of sharing is to use SharePoint, whereby that Excel document can be published and secured in a document library, then via the URL, people can access it, and via a service, Excel services in this case, that workbook can be calculated server-side and rendered back through the browser. So the document doesn't necessarily even get downloaded to the person requesting it. They interact with it in the browser. And you'll see that this afternoon. So the first topic, focusing on Excel, will be how to produce a data model. Power Pivot was an add-in that you had available in Excel 2010 to extend the native capabilities of Excel to support the creation of a data model. The news in Excel 2013 is that this is now just built into the product. Technically, it is an add-in, but it is just there with a Professional Plus edition. You do need to enable the add-in, and this will then allow you to use the Power Pivot window to create and define the data model definition. These data models can represent large volumes of data. Potentially, and I'm not joking, billions of rows of data could be compressed and stored in the data model, then stored in the workbook. Very good for integrating data stores. The old-fashioned approach was the VLOOKUP function. Let's just bring in ranges of data, and a VLOOKUP will allow us to integrate that. Well, this product, via the establishment of relationships between tables, will allow you to do this simply and very efficiently. Embedding business logic, your calculations, including key performance indicators, become part of the model definition. And there's also the ability to optimize it to exploit the PowerView reporting capabilities. All right, this is where we switch into demonstration. Looking good. 75 minutes isn't a long time to show you a lot. So this is like those cooking shows, whereby this is a partially complete cake, and then I'm going to put the icing on top. So what I have here looks like an empty workbook. I do have a couple of worksheets defined. They're prompts for me for some demonstrations. Now, if I go ahead and open up the Power Pivot window, I'll show you that I've already created a Power Pivot data model. I've imported four tables of data from a connection to my data warehouse. This is a sample set of data called Tailspin Toys, represents the sales of model aeroplanes and helicopters. Okay, basic model here, giving me sales, the ability to define date, product, and state. Some of the capabilities built in here is the ability to create hierarchies to support navigation, in this case from year to quarter to month, or from category to the product name. And then the analysis will take place here with these calculations that will aggregate product count, the units, and sales. So the first thing we're going to demonstrate is that with this completed model, here inside Excel, I can insert a pivot table based on this workbook connection to the workbook data model. And I'll go ahead and create this pivot table here in cell B1. And the fields over here on the right express to me what the model developer intended that I would see. Okay, I want to have a look at sales. Total of 40 million. Typically want to filter that by a time period, so I'll take that calendar hierarchy, drag it into the filters, and then I can filter by the year 2010. To provide further context, in the product table, I have the products hierarchy, and there we see from catalog or category down to the individual products. To really encourage interactivity with this report and to allow users to filter by different regions, I take the region level and I add it as a slicer. As now users can filter by time, they can filter by a region. That's the basics, a data model, the ease at which we can produce interactive reports. Perhaps it's ad hoc, I've answered my question, I delete the worksheet. But a great example of using Power Pivot is that beyond the basics of just bringing in a set of tables from an established single data source like your corporate data warehouse, is that there's a certain deficiency here that my analysis needs to extend to profit analysis. So in fact, I'll rename this sheet to call it profit monitoring. And it doesn't matter how hard I try, when I look at the data warehouse, there is no such definition of cost of goods sold or profit calculations. And this is where I can use corporate data and I can relate it to some ad hoc data or local data that I have, and I can extend the usefulness of this data model. So by introducing data from other data sources, and I choose an Excel file, then I have this Excel workbook that defines all of the products by their stock keeping unit and the cost to manufacture them. The first row contains headers. And when I click Next, it says, well, yeah, there's a range of data here called product cost. When I preview and filter, sure enough, I see the data that's stored in that workbook, stock keeping unit, product name, and the cost. And I say, well, don't introduce product. I already have that defined in the product table, but I certainly need this column to relate to that table, and this is the valuable information that's going to allow me to integrate the cost of products into the model. Click Finish. It introduces then a fifth table from a second data source. And simply by dragging and dropping, no need for a VLOOKUP function here, I've established a relationship between those two tables and essentially two data sources. Then I would come to my sales table and I would introduce a calculator column that says, go and retrieve via the relationships defined in this model from the product cost table, the product cost column, and then multiply it by the value found in the quantity column. And essentially, this calculation is per row the cost for that sale. So I'll rename this, cost of goods sold. Update the data type. Now for each row in the table, I have a value. But what's important when it comes to the analysis and for business intelligence style queries is the aggregation of these values. So I can take this column and then use the auto sum to sum the values in this column. And then I'll provide the name here of cost. And that would just prompt me to then go ahead and hide this column. That's not useful for someone that's querying the model through a pivot table, for example. It's the calculation that they will use, and it will then be filtered via their slices and filters and row context on the pivot table. I can then extend this now with my profit calculation. Profit is sales subtract cost. And we'll format that as a currency. And then next, to support the monitoring, it implies that I've got a comparison. What was the profit? What did we want the profit or expect the profit to be? So I'm going to create another calculation here called profitability that will be equal just to the profit. And let me explain why. What we can do with the calculation is that we can create a key performance indicator based on it. So that profitability, when divided by sales, will give me a ratio of what the profit was across the sales. And here I've got a 3-band status. And I'm going to say, according to my rule, if you're 5% or less, that is well off track. If you are 15% or above, that is the profit level that we expect to achieve. And this is the icon that I would like those levels to be expressed in. And so now switching across to the diagram view, we can see we've enriched the model with these three calculations, thanks to the introduction of this table here that I will now hide from any client tool. They don't need to know it exists. That product cost has found its way into this column and is aggregated through this calculation here. Switching back to Excel then, I can then extend this pivot table by then introducing from the KPI the value and the status. And now we can appreciate that, you know, the gliders are slightly off track because the products that belong to this, one of them is well off track, the other two are on track. And there's a classic example where Power Pivot comes to the fore, the ability to bring in that corporate data and bring in ad hoc and local data. Now another requirement is demographic analysis. This is my favorite topic when it comes to reporting from a data model. And that is that Excel natively since 2007 has included these 7 cube functions. And these cube functions allow you, cell by cell, to introduce members and values in any arrangement that you want. Pivot tables are great for fast, flexible, interactive experiences. But when you want to tailor a report to look exactly as you'd like it to look, these cube functions really come to the rescue. So I'm going to use the cube set function here. And the first parameter value to pass in will be the workbook connection. The IntelliSense here says that I have 1. It's in fact the built-in connection that connects to the Power Pivot data model. So using that connection, I'm going to bring in a set from my products dimension. There's a demographics hierarchy. There's an all member. And then you'll see that there are 5 different demographics. This is self-service BI, but this will become a little advanced for some people because you'll need to understand how to query and navigate the multidimensional space that this model offers. By asking for the children beneath the all, I'm going to retrieve a set dynamically of the members in the demographic hierarchy. And I provide a caption that you'll then see in cell A1. So what really resides in cell A1 is a formula to retrieve dynamically those members. And then I'm going to construct my report here. As a header of my table, it's going to be demographic. And then I'm going to use the cube ranked member function. Again, against my data model, it says, what set are you using? Well, use the set in A1 and use an absolute reference to it. Because what I'm doing here is producing a template that when I copy it, it will work as I copy it to other rows. And then using the IntelliSense here, Oh no, that's fine. That's what I wanted. Jumping ahead. Q 2x1. Which rank from the set do you want? So typically I want just the first item. The next row will be the second item, third item, fourth item. Creating a template, if I use the row function, the row of A1 is 1. The row of A55 is 55. So this template then will work for the first member, and as I copy it down, there's the other five members. Then here, with a header of sales, I will use the cube value function. Against that connection, use this member, and essentially this is a filtered set, just pass in the members that are going to filter from my measures, go ahead and bring in sales. So what we see is that there were 6,251,000 of sales for advanced products. Now, I'm going to make this a little more interesting because I would like it to filter by the selection here in a pivot table, and this will make sense as the demonstration continues. So what I'm going to do is provide a named range, which is year. And I'm actually going to change this to year. That's better. 2010, there's my named range, and I can pass that in as just another filter. So what we're now seeing is the 2010 sales for advanced, and I can copy this down, and there's the sales for the others. So what could I do with this data? Well, if I select it as a range, insert a column chart. And there's a way of visually expressing in a custom way exactly how I want this report to be laid out. Okay, so that's working with Excel, Power Pivot, and some reports based off the Power Pivot workbook and data model. Data Explorer, a new capability in preview presently, allowing us to do much more with data. When it comes to accessing, typically and commonly, actually, the data is not really in the format that you want. Sometimes you need to bring it into Excel, you need to play around with it, and then load it into the data model. What this add-in is going to allow you to do is to connect to even a greater variety of data sources than Power Pivot allows, and to provide transformational steps to prepare the data, and then optionally bring the data into the workbook or load it directly into the Power Pivot model. So the demonstration here takes my Power Pivot workbook to the next level. My manager is so impressed with it, he says, that's great, but what about our success regionally? What are we doing per capita in the different states of the United States? Now again, this is a great question and a valid question for the business to ask. However, we go to the data warehouse and we don't find any table that gives us population information. So we hunt around the internet and we find precisely the data that we're looking for. And this is actually a web page from the US Census. Okay, it's 2009, but it'll be close enough for what I need. A couple of observations here. It's about rank, but what we're interested in is the number here in this column. It also includes the United States as a summary, which we won't need. I just need every state and the population value. So what I'm going to do is copy this URL, switch back to my Excel workbook, and then I can say, on my new Data Explorer tab, and this is here because I've installed the add-in, and I can say just bring in data from the web. Okay, what URL? Paste it in, click OK. And instead of calling it Query 1, I'm going to rename this as State Population. And what you'll see here is that when I select it, it actually brings in the HTML table. And here we see the layout in a tabular form. Now, I like to turn the settings here and show the formula bar because there's actually a statement that's being executed. And you'll see a buildup of steps here as I transform the data from its original state, as you see here. So let me start by renaming this column to become state or census population. Step two was just introduced. To rename a column. Rank I don't even need. Right-click, remove. The United States I don't need, and I can remove that by filtering and removing that row. And now that the data has been transformed, I can click Done, and then it retrieves the data from that web source, and then I simply say Load to the data model. And now when I switch across, we see the addition of state population that has been transformed from a web request. Okay, so I have state across here. So the way that I'm going to relate this is a little different this time. The one thing about Power Pivot is that it doesn't really handle one-to-one relationships. It's really about one-to-many relationships. So the most appropriate way to do this is to introduce a calculated column here that will perform a lookup. It's sort of like our VLOOKUP coming back to us. So to make this a little easier for me, I've just got a snippet here. Using the lookup value function, it looks up the value and allows me to introduce it into this calculation. There we go. So there's a lookup. Rename this. This will become census population. Format this as a whole number. Like to get the formats right. And then because we'll be aggregating by this, let's create a calculation that will sum this. And I'll simply name this population. And that will allow me then again to hide this column. So users won't know it exists, but they will have access to this calculation. And then to meet my manager's requirement, I switch across to my sales table and I can come up with a new calculation for sales per capita. And format that as a currency. So now switching across to the diagram view, I've extended it by the addition of this data, which I can now hide. And that's where Data Explorer comes to the fore. So essentially what Data Explorer has done is introduced this new table that behind it is this set of steps that transform the data from the original source. You can refresh directly from this if you need to. But for now, I'm just going to go ahead and hide that sheet. Okay, that's available in preview presently. You can go to Microsoft.com downloads. You have Excel 2013. Go ahead and download the add-in, install it, start to play around with it. That's the preparation of data, the cleansing of data, and the representation of your data through a data model. The visualization so far I've covered with a pivot table and a chart, and I've also shown you the cube functions. I could dedicate a whole 75 minutes and still not show you the potential of those. Let's talk now about PowerView as a new capability built in Excel 2013. It must be based on a tabular data model. That could be an embedded Power Pivot data model. It could be an external data model that you have permissions to access and query. This is all about visualization of data, interactivity, and making your data as sexy as possible with as few skills. It's actually reasonably straightforward to pick up if you have a well-designed data model supporting you. So let's see this one in demonstration. Next step is that now that we have sales per capita information in the data model, well, let's go ahead and represent it visually and spatially. On the Insert tab, I can insert a PowerView sheet into the workbook. Going to be about sales per capita. I'm going to hide the filters pane. I'm prompted to put a title up here. And you'll notice here on the right side the field list exposing all of the visible resources in terms of tables, columns, hierarchies, and the calculations and KPIs. So from the date table, I just bring in the year field. That creates a first column of a table. And this is special. If you have a single column table, you can convert that single column to become a slicer. New in this release is you can increase the font size, and now users have an interactive way to slice the data that they see on this sheet. So let's filter down to 2010. Clicking in a blank area allows me to start to write a new table. So in this table, I'll start with my state table and introduce the state field. And from the sales table, we'll find that we have sales per capita. So at this point, what I could do is click on the header once sort ascending, click again, sort descending, and we can tell that Delaware is where we have the best market penetration at 85 cents per person. Far more effective is to switch this table across to a map visualization. Now, Excel at this point wants to communicate with the Bing Map service. Must have your permission to do that. When it does, communicates with the service, brings back a map, geocodes the states to determine the lat long, the latitude, longitude to place, and then our data is now represented. The size of the bubble represents the sales per capita. And this is all interactive. Drill right in to see the continental states. And I could also come in here and say, well, it's relevant to analyze down to demographic as well. So in my product, I have demographic, and when you bring this in, you've now got a legend and little pie charts. So we're in New Orleans. Let's take a look at what's going on in Louisiana. By hovering over here now, we can see in this state that for professional demographics, we're selling at 8 cents per capita. In contrast, intermediate at 3 cents per capita. This is one example of what you could easily and quickly achieve with PowerView based on a tabular data model. New in Office 2013, Apps for Office. Essentially, an app for Office is a little applet, a safe applet, HTML5, JavaScript, XML, REST APIs, and this opens up the potential for Excel to go ahead and do some extraordinary things that it wasn't ever originally designed to do, not as an overthought, but basically this is opening up the potential for developers to go out there and extend it in imaginative ways. What you can do is you can connect to the store, and then you can browse and acquire, and as I mentioned, some are free, and you can introduce them into Excel, and then you can go ahead and connect and visualize your data through some of these experiences. The one that you see on the slide here is a gauge. I won't show you that one today, but as an advertisement for tomorrow's session that I'm doing on analysis services and KPIs, you'll see how this gauge could be used to express your KPIs in an Excel workbook. The example that I have for you is to work with a really cute one. I'm not sure if it's terribly practical, but it just looks good, and it's called Bubbles. And so returning to my freeform report here with the cube functions, I've decided that this chart isn't spectacular enough, so I select and delete it. And then I come to the Insert tab here, and I insert an app for Office. And it wants me to sign in. And then the apps that I've actually acquired are here. So there's the gauge. Bing Maps can also be introduced direct into your workbook, so not necessarily through PowerView. I'll insert Bubbles. And this is what Bubbles looks like. Now you see here to configure it, Bubbles wants you to select a table. So I'm going to take this range and I'm going to create a table. That's an Excel table. And now when I click on this bubble, I can then define that that's the range of data that you'll express. So what's pretty cool about this is that it's all sort of quite fluid. Down here you see some keyboard controls that you can actually control through the up, I should select it, through the up and the down. How strong or weak is gravity? The rules that will allow the bubbles to bounce around. And even if I just refresh the data here, let's just sort it. You'll see that the bubbles update. So if you update the values in your workbook or the formulas express a new result, the bubbles will be in sync with that. And this is just one example of what you can do with these new apps. The next is the new one also. So Geoflow is the project code name at the moment. This is the ability for you via Excel and a new add-in to visually express your spatial data. Now, we already have this with PowerView. I've shown you this. But what's new with Geoflow is the ability to do this in three dimensions and to record tours consisting of scenes that you can stitch together that tell a story, including animations, annotations. And the animations can take place across time. And so let me demonstrate this one for you. There are a couple of things to be aware of in the preview mode. And essentially that is, it must be based on a power pivot data model, and there are certain rules. You can't have any hidden columns, and it won't currently respect any calculations you have. You can only work with the base columns that you have in your tables. So there are some limitations in the preview, and so therefore I've created a different workbook that overcomes those limitations. Essentially, it's very similar to what I've already shown you, but not as refined as what I'd prepared for the Power View reporting. So essentially, this is my Power Pivot workbook. Because I've installed the Geoflow add-in, here on the Insert tab, I can insert Geoflow. All right, so on the left-hand side, I have the ability to define my tour. So let's create a tour that allows the description and understanding of where spatially our sales are taking place. So this is the US sales. And here is the first scene within the tour. And I can configure that scene by clicking on here, and I'll provide a name for it. Because we're in Louisiana, let's talk about Southern sales. And that becomes the name of the scene. To configure then the layers of data that will be laid on top of the map. The first thing you need to do is configure where your spatial data comes from. So it could be latitude, longitude data, it could be cities, it could be street addresses, it could be well-known landmarks. In fact, if you go to bing.com/maps and you search for something and it can find it on the map, if you use that same text within your data model, then the chances are very high that Bing Maps will correctly geocode and allow you to map it. US states, I think it has a pretty good idea about. So by selecting state, you'll see here it already got the classification correct, probably by the name of the field. If not, you would adjust it. And then I could say, go ahead and map the data. And what we can see then is a point for every state. Let's focus in on Louisiana. And maybe let's not focus in quite so well. Let's have a look. So we can see a few southern states. I don't know my geography well enough, but I think that's a good view. All right, let's visualize some data. So from the sales table, I can bring in revenue. And you can see here that it introduces a legend here describing the revenue. So this is actually my layer. What I think we can do is provide a better name for it than layer one. We're going to map demographics. So switching back to the layer, now that I have those points, so you can see here the height represents relatively the sales or the revenue that's been achieved per state, but I can also bring in a category like, from my product, where are you? Category. Oh, no, demographic. So now you see by default we end up with this category that is stacked. By hovering over the points, let me choose one that's not obscured. There for Missouri, we can see revenue is $260,000 for the intermediate demographic. In contrast, for the same state, the advanced demographic was bringing in $119,000. So I do have the option to switch this across to clustered as well. So maybe that's a better representation. To point out also that there are visualizations that do bubbles and the heat map. So good for not necessarily temperatures, but it's probably the best example. Is if you had a lot of data points and temperatures, then it would produce like that isobar approach with colors to show you the relationships across geographic space. All right, so this is my southern perspective. I was really wanting Louisiana. Let's go back and say find Louisiana. And we'll just zoom out. Is that it? That's Illinois. Further south, Missouri. Well, it's much further south, isn't it? There we go. Is that it? Yes, okay. So maybe this is what's of interest to us. So I can right-click here and say, well, let's annotation, and I can put a title in here that could be based just on a field, like this is the state. Look out for new prospects here. Just making that up. And then you can add annotations to the data itself. So there's my first scene, focusing on southern sales, drawing the attention to Louisiana. Next, what I'm going to do is introduce a second scene. and the configuration for this scene will be Californian sales. The story that I'm telling wants to make some comparison between the two. The effects here allow you to determine the transition between the scenes and how should it look. Think that you're the cameraman here. So I'll choose something like Dolly, and then I'll go ahead and say, go ahead and find California. And we'll zoom right in. I'll switch this across. And we can see here that the intermediate is flying. So I'm going to go ahead and annotation here that says intermediate sails are taking off. And then I'll use a field to express the revenue. And what I think is really spectacular, visually I think this is spectacular, and the fact that we can use themes as well, is that we can also animate across time itself. So on the layers for this scene, I'll come in and choose date, and you'll see that date then as a field gets added here to the time, and you have different ways of expressing that, whether it's instant or an accumulation that builds up, so I'll leave that default on. I think I'm ready to show you the tour. So, playing the tour, this is what the story looks like. Southern sails, and then a focus on California. And now for the animation across time and the focus on those intermediate sails. Is that cool? And do you think it's reasonably simple that this is a tool that will be grasped easily by business analysts and potentially managers? Maybe. I would think probably so. And it always comes down to the same story, that if you have a well-designed and easily understood data model, you can make mistakes sometimes, but you'll know it when you attempt to map it. So you actually teach yourself, once you've got a good data model in place, what happens if I put this field here, and so on and so on. So that's Geoflow. Moving from data visualization with Excel, Excel also has add-ins for data mining. So data mining as a technology is the ability to inspect data looking for patterns, and those patterns are useful in telling you something, often useful in telling you things that would be very difficult to learn just by visually inspecting and filtering that data. Now, where you trust the patterns that are delivered from data mining is that they can be very, very useful for predictions, well beyond the old gut instinct that we think something will happen. Why not support your gut instinct or challenge yourself by what the data and a bit of science thrown in could be telling you that could happen? Now, there's actually two add-ins available for Excel. These have been available since 2007. And the first one is the table analysis tools, that if you have data prepared sitting inside an Excel table, you have the add-in installed, you will have the Analyze tab come up. And there's 6 or 7 different data mining capabilities that are there. What I think is remarkable is that it doesn't ever use the word data mining. Yeah, that might frighten some people. This is something that's typically studied, you know, advanced bachelor's, master's, PhD subjects. We're talking about statisticians that are passionate about data. Yet, in line with Microsoft's vision of business intelligence for the masses and everyone, data mining is no exception. So the table analysis tools are very, very useful in making data mining accessible within a familiar tool like Excel. Now, there are the client tools as well. This is more advanced, and it supports the entire lifecycle of data preparation, modeling, validation, accuracy testing, and querying of a data model, all within Excel itself. It's extremely powerful. Both add-ins require a connection to analysis services in multidimensional and data mining mode, so that is one requirement. Unlike Power Pivot, the modeling engine is actually built into Excel these days. You don't need to install or connect to any remote service. For these add-ins, you do. So let's do some forecasting of sales. I need to know what the next 2 months of sales are likely to be. So I've been told by IT that they've gone and created a table for me that will allow me to retrieve the data that I need. So bringing in data from SQL Server, I'm told that in the Tailspin Toys database, there is this view called 2010 Demographic Sales. Sounds good. Introduce it. The result of bringing in a view or a table is it will create an Excel table, and that's precisely what I need. So you notice that when the table's in focus, and because the add-in is installed, that I have this Analyze tab. And here are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 tools that will let me analyze and predict. So I'm going to use Forecast, but before I use it, I need to click here. There's a bug. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. You'll just bear with me while I save the workbook and reopen it. Not sure why this happens. It usually happens during demonstrations. I'll close the workbook and just open it again. It'll be fine. So, where was I? Here we go. Here's the table. On the Analyze tab, I need to connect across to an instance of Analysis Services. So the way that the setup guides you is that you create a database and you just grant privileges to those that you want to use it. What these add-ins will do by default is use temporary mining models. So there's one property that you need to switch on the server to allow this to happen. And what this means is that when Excel does the data mining, well, technically it's not doing the data mining. Let me explain what happens. When I go ahead and forecast, and I'll forecast each of the demographics, and I'll request the next two periods, where is my timestamp? You'll see that I've got this numeric identifier for the months of 2010. And then this is very important, that you define the periodicity. This is monthly data. This is important because the data mining engine is looking for patterns that are typically cyclical. So it will know that every 12 rows represents a year, and it will look for patterns that repeat within that year. Now, what happens when I click Run is that it communicates with the server, it creates a temporary mining model, it pushes the data up to the server, the data mining is done on the Analysis Services instance, and then results come back in two forms. First of all, it appends two rows. There's the 2 months that I've requested, and I might go ahead and fill this in and say, well, that's 2011, January and February, and then it produces an extra worksheet consisting of a chart based on that table that shows me with a solid line what the actuals were, and the dotted line is the forecast. So some of these are really straightforward to work with, and there's a couple of really cool ones that you can play around with, including that I've got missing values. Use data mining to assess what the missing values could be. Highlight exceptions. There could be irregular or abnormal data here that doesn't make sense compared to the rest of the data. I'll leave the rest for you to explore. The data mining tab, by the way, is the second add-in. This is the add-in that allows you to prepare, create, validate, and query your own mining models. So that's Excel with its capability to perform data mining for you and working with the table analysis tools. Switching from Excel then to Visio. The way that I've defined this session is that I work on the client first. Everything I've done so far is me on my desktop, not sharing with anyone. And the story continues here with Visio as well. So with Visio, you're probably familiar that this is an application that allows you to create diagrams. Maybe what you're not aware of is the fact that Excel can connect to external data and that you can represent values through the shapes in your diagram. These diagrams can, and as I will demonstrate, be published to SharePoint, and they can be rendered and made available through the browser. So in this demonstration, I'll create a data-driven diagram. And again, like the cooking show, the hard work's really been done. I've gone ahead and I've created a diagram that consists of my 5 servers. So I've used the appropriate shapes that identify the role of those servers. And then what I want to do is take some data and map it to each of these shapes. And as it turns out, in SharePoint, I have a list of data that I have created and managed. So this is truly a self-service solution. I've not been reliant on IT to even maintain the storage of this data. I kept it very simple for this demonstration that I have an item in this list for each of my servers consisting of the server name and the status. All servers are currently online. So switching back to Visio on the client. On the data tab, I come ahead and I say, well, let's link data to shapes. Now, before I do this, it's important to understand that shapes have a collection of properties. So the selection of this one here shows all of the properties that I have by default. Important to know that the server property has already been filled in with the unique server name on the network. Let's link data to shapes. Bringing in data from Excel, bringing it in from Access, SharePoint list, SQL Server, or other sources that are OLEDB or ODBC. Of course, it's going to be a SharePoint list. Connect to my server, interrogates the lists that are available, and there's the server list. And then it introduces into the diagram a data set consisting of columns and rows of data. Next thing I do is come to column settings, and I remove columns that I don't want associated with my shapes. So essentially, I just want the two columns of the server itself and the status. And now we see a more simple and concise list of data. Now, with the understanding that DC, my domain controller, is this shape here, I could simply drag and drop. And the rule here is for each data set, a row can only associate to one shape. But be aware you can have multiple data sets, and therefore you could have multiple bits of data associating across. Therefore, a shape could retrieve data from different data sets, potentially different data sources. Now, that could become tedious if you have dozens and dozens of shapes. And the good news is that I've already predefined that server property, so I can use this automatically link feature. So all shapes on this page link where the server matches the server. And then you'll see this little link icon telling me that those rows have now been associated. So let me go ahead and hide the data set. And now when you select a shape, you'll see that it's also added a new property in. Because there was a status column, then that becomes a new property of the shapes and the value is passed across. So the next thing is, how do we then represent this data through the diagram? So what I'm going to do is lasso and select all of those shapes. And here on the data tab, I can create a new data graphic. And essentially a data graphic is a collection of items that define how those shape properties can be expressed visually. So the first item I'll choose will be the server field, and I'll express this as text. I won't use the default position, I want to center it, and vertically I'll place it above the shape. I've got some pre-built styles, so I think heading 3 looks reasonably attractive, but I'll increase the font to a size of 16. And now when I apply that data graphic to those shapes, we see the data appears across the top as I'd requested. So with those shapes still selected, I can go ahead and edit that data graphic and introduce a second item. And this time for the status, I'm going to display it as color by value. The only value that it's aware of, because all servers currently have the online status, is that we have an online value. Now, I think red's probably an inappropriate color to define online. But then I'm going to insert a second value of offline. And of course, red would be appropriate in this situation. So now I have a collection of two items in this data graphic. And when I apply this, we now see everything looks good. And that's really the story about how you can introduce external data, increase the data properties for your shapes, pass values into them, and then express them through these graphics. We'll see the second part of this story when I come to SharePoint. So far everything I've talked about is on the client with Excel and Visio. Are there any questions from anyone that is compelling and needs to be answered before I move on to the sharing story with SharePoint? Okay, so I'll take it as all making sense. Like I've said, when it comes to sharing these workbooks, data models, reports, when it comes to sharing the diagrams, it really isn't appropriate to just send them out as attachments. Even less appropriate, I think, to actually put them in a file share. While you can secure them, their use, their access, the ability to look at logic, perhaps private intellectual property, you can't control it very well. And this is where SharePoint, as a content management system, it's really its strength. Let's take these documents, store them in libraries, ensure they're secured, and then we can use server-side services like Excel services, Visio services, that upon requests for these documents, it will go ahead and perform the server-side calculations and then render a result back via the browser. If you grant read-only permissions, the document can never be downloaded. The best that someone can do if they have that URL or access to browse or search for that document is experience it through the browser itself. So that's what SharePoint has to offer when it comes to business intelligence, Excel services, Visio services. We'll also cover Performance Point services, which enables you to create dashboards consisting of KPIs, scorecards, reports, and to filter these in assembled dashboards. Not covered in this session, reporting services. Doesn't fall under the topic of Office. It has a role to play with SharePoint in that you can create and deploy and manage reports within SharePoint, but that would be another session. All right, so Excel services. Really, it's a service that can calculate your workbooks, no different to how it calculates them when you refresh them on the client, but it can send results back through HTML, which is the common way it does it. The brilliance about this is that it supports a zero-footprint web client like Internet Explorer, or in fact, any web browser that SharePoint supports. So it would be Firefox, and that would be, what's the one that I'm missing? IE, Safari, Firefox. If you have workbook connections, whether it's to the internal workbook model or to an external data source, like an analysis services cube or data model, Excel services can re-query and refresh the data that is expressed back through the web browser. Architecturally, it works like this. In the bottom, you would create Excel workbooks no different to what I've demonstrated in this session. You would publish them to the SharePoint document library. A request for them would then engage Excel services to load that workbook. If necessary, refresh data connections, refresh the workbook itself, and then via the Excel web access, deliver the response back to the browser. Okay, let's see this in demonstration. Working with Excel services and a continuation of the workbook that I've built up. So this is the phase where I say, well, don't just publish the workbook. Think about what you want exposed to someone that will be connecting to the workbook. So you have the ability through publication options to determine what is visible and what is not. You also have the ability to parameterize. And by parameterizing, this will allow someone to pass values in to therefore allow Excel to calculate based on the values that are passed in. So the classic is this here in cell C1, that I would like people to pass in the year. And they can change that through their own experience. So what I'm going to do here is, preparation for this one is done. The preparation to expose a filter as a parameter is that you create a named range for it. When I created the name range named year, that is a candidate for parameterization. I will, however, go into the pivot table options and provide a more friendly name for the pivot table. So in fact, this will become profit monitoring. On my demographic analysis with the bubbles, yes, these can be published to Excel services as well, is I'm going to select a range. And I'm going to name this demographic analysis. Also, on the view tab, I will turn off grid lines. I don't want it to even look like it's Excel. You can also turn off the headings. And then I come into File. Browser view options. Instead of publishing the entire workbook, just publish items in the workbook. The profit monitoring pivot table, and under the named ranges, the one that's named demographic analysis. On the parameters tab, I'm going to add a parameter that will allow passing a value into the year filter. And now with that configured, I can save across to SharePoint. So there's a Power Pivot gallery that I'm talking about in just a moment, but let me save it there. And now that document has been saved to a secured library. It inherits the permissions of the library itself, and I'm confident that people can no longer download it, but they can request it through the browser. The topic of Power Pivot then has a close relationship with Excel services. Essentially, when you have a workbook that contains a Power Pivot data model, and a request is made for it via Excel services, it will discover this through the collection of the workbook data connections. It will discover that there's a connection called this workbook data model. And it will then understand that there's connecting to an embedded data model. It will then engage the Power Pivot service to take that data model and restore it to an instance of analysis services within the SharePoint farm. And then Excel services will have a connection string to then query. So essentially, the publication of a workbook that has a Power Pivot data model is a deployment process that the business user can undertake themselves. With this comes some other capabilities. The ability to connect to this workbook as a data source. So other experiences like reporting services, other Excel workbooks, even other Power Pivot workbooks can connect to and consume the data model via its URL, granted you have permission to do this. In addition, you can launch PowerView within the web browser and create similar reports and experiences like the map that I created. And then finally, the business user has the ability to go ahead and define data refresh policy. So I'll switch across to SharePoint here. And inside the PowerPivot gallery, you'll see there is my workbook. And here are the commands to launch and create a new Excel workbook that connects to this. So on the client, I can connect and create a pivot table that creates my own experience or use cube functions based off this data model. Here I could launch PowerView. Here I could create data refresh that says every 24 hours, update all of the tables that relate to this data connection. What I'm going to do is create a dashboard based on the two items. So by creating a web part page, sales, reports, and a header with a left column, this creates a web part page with these zones for me. I can then come in and add web parts, and then categorized here in business data, I have the Excel web access. And then I can configure this by clicking here and opening up the tool pane. And all it wants to know then is what workbook. Okay, well, in my Power Pivot gallery, I have the sales analysis workbook. And because there are multiple items that I published, profit monitoring. And let me double check. That's what I called it. There we go. That is the item that I want displayed in that web part. Don't show me an automatic title. Don't allow the user to interact. So let's turn off the toolbar. And then from an appearance point of view, let's just call this profit monitoring. And now I've embedded that item into the web part page. I can repeat that again because I have a second item. So a second Excel web access into the same zone, connecting to the same workbook. And this time it was demographic analysis. Again, no toolbar. I might give this a little more room to breathe. 600 pixels, okay. And then you can see Excel services here. It's rendered the table and it's just catching up to understand what this little HTML applet is. While it's doing that, I'm going to add another web part, which will be a filter. So there's an analysis services filter type, which is ideal for the tabular model these are based on. And then I can configure this by saying, we'll give it the name of year. We'll base it on a pre-published data connection that points to the tabular model. And then within that model, I will tell it that from the date dimension, there's a hierarchy called year. And that is what the filter will be based on. Under advanced, I can even put a default value in there, but you need to know in MDX how you're going to access that. I'm going to default it to a member with a key of 2010. This is where we depart from this self-service BI. I would expect that they go through some basic MDX to know how to configure these types of advanced settings. Provide a title, year, and the width of about 120 pixels usually does it. So with that configuration, now I have three web parts. The final step is to then go ahead and create connections. So upon selection and applying a filter, and here is the filter up here, I can define a connection that points the filter value to the profit monitoring web part. And you'll see that there is a year parameter. That is the parameterization that I configured when I published the workbook. So pass that value into year and also pass it into the second web part. from the same workbook, it has the same parameters. And now with that configuration, I can stop editing, and this is the user experience that someone would have when they come to this web part page. Let's modify for 2011, passes that value in, refreshes the reports, and then I've got this dashboard-like experience. That's Excel Services. Okay, the ability then to take those workbooks and to assemble through web part pages other experiences. I could also embed reports and other experiences beyond Excel there. Visio Services, very similar story. So the ability then to publish that workbook, or rather the diagram, and this is how it's done, file. You have the ability with publish options, there could be multiple pages, only make these pages visible. I'm going to publish everything, save as, to browse, and I have a diagrams library. And what's important is you must save this as a VSDX format. That is the only format that Visio Services will recognize. So now by saving this, users then can browse to the diagrams library, and simply by requesting it, it's available through the browser. And so it's pretty cool, if that makes sense to you. Now, if you use the Visio Web Access web part, very similar in concept to Excel Web Services, or Excel Web Access, is there's a property to configure that is the automatic refresh interval. So by default it's 0, that says it doesn't refresh, but if you change that to 1, which is the lowest, every minute it will automatically refresh. So it becomes this unattended dashboard experience. So for example, if I came in here and then modified one of those servers to a different status, so let's take the database server offline. And you can imagine that 1 minute elapses, and I'll just refresh here. That's Visio Services. Okay, so think about store layouts, restaurant layouts. If you have data that would make sense to express visually with a status, this works extremely well. Last topic, and this is the most advanced and arguably not really a self-service topic. Performance Point Services is about performance management, allowing us to monitor through KPIs what happened versus what we expected to happen. I have an entire session on this tomorrow. Typically what happens when you discover something is off track is that you want to know why. So having associated reports supports the analysis. And then if you can assemble these in a dashboard that's delivered in a zero footprint web client, you've got a Performance Point Services solution. So essentially there are 7 components. Very briefly, you must define where your data is coming from. You can build KPIs that connect to different data stores. Indicators are graphic sets that allow you to graphically represent things like status. And then you embed these KPIs into scorecards that you can think of as specialty reports for representing KPIs. And scorecards can reference data sources too, to allow you to bring in members of hierarchies across columns and rows. This is the monitoring capability of this product. To support the analysis, you have reports that could be Excel services reports, it could be reporting services reports, it could be built-in analytic charts and grids. To assemble a dashboard, you then define filters, and then you bring the filters, reports, and scorecards together and deploy the dashboards to SharePoint. This is all achieved through what's called Dashboard Designer. It is a rich client that through a ClickOnce deployment installed on the desktop. And then using this experience, you can go ahead and create your layouts. So what I have here then is a workspace that has been nearly completed. The data connection here is pointing to the Power Pivot workbook that I published. And then I've gone ahead and built a KPI for profitability that connects to the KPI that I defined in my first demonstration. I can then go ahead and create a scorecard. I'll start with a blank scorecard. And then I can introduce that KPI into the scorecard. And then when I go ahead and update, I get to see what the live data looks like against the two metrics of actual and target. And then I make the decision to make this more concise is I don't want to show any values, just show the actual profit and whether we're on track or not. And then what I can do is bring in from my dimensions, from product, bring in the members of the demographic, and dynamically, with all descendants, place them beneath and allow me then to filter and see what the KPI looked like against the demographics. Now what I'll do is make this underline, and I'll make this blue, and that's a very strong hint that there's an action that I can define against this. In the properties, I'll provide a name for the scorecard. And that definition is now saved in SharePoint and is available to add to a dashboard. Now, I've already built a report here called Regional Sales. So basically, it's a bar chart that shows me the different demographics, the sales, and you'll note here with the background the ability to pass in a year and a demographic. This is how we can pass context from other items in the dashboard to filter this report. I've got a filter here defined on the year hierarchy of the date table. And then finally, I've got the sales dashboard. It has two pages, a scorecard and demographic analysis. Starting with the scorecard, I put the filter in the header, and there's my year filter. Left-hand side, I place the scorecard, and the right-hand side, I place regional sales. So what's left to do now is to create connections to allow values to pass between the items. So that year should pass and filter the scorecard. That year filter should also pass into the background of my report. So you can see the two backgrounds that I defined, pass it to year. And then because I have the demographics on the rows of the scorecards, pass that member unique name in and pass it to the demographic. Deploy. Time permitting, I would have put a second page on the dashboard and put my Excel report. The bubbles could have turned up here just by passing in that item from this workbook is displayed as a report. Here we see the dashboard. Let me filter by a year. And so I can see that we're off track for novice. Click novice, passes the context over here. And then I might decide for further analysis, I'll open this up in a new window. So here's my chart. I can right click, and this is amazing interactivity and exploration in this zero footprint web client. So I'll go ahead and I'll convert this to the grid, and this will allow me to expand and collapse. And also the ability to modify the measures, show me what cost, profit, and the number of units we sold. And then I can filter and I can sort across this. And then I might discover that this is the root problem. Let's explore even further. A decomposition tree is this visualization. This requires Silverlight, but the ability to then come in here and then say, oh, well, show me what happened across the months of that year. And across the months, what happened across the different channel types that we have. And voila, there's the problem. Open that up in a grid, and let's start taking action. That's Performance Point Services. It's a fairly advanced topic for self-service BI, but it's a capability built into SharePoint 2013 and 2010. All right, so we've arrived in the last minute and 15 seconds. Timing has done well for me. The summary is, and what I'd hope that you would take away in this session, is that Office 2013 and SharePoint 2013 empowers business users to design, customize, and maintain their own solutions. These solutions can leverage data preparation. Excel natively does this, but Data Explorer takes it to a new level. Data models, natively built into Excel now, but the Power Pivot capability, extremely powerful for allowing you to integrate and enrich a data model with hierarchies, calculations, KPIs. Rich and interactive data visualization beyond the basics of the standard pivot table, pivot chart. I've shown you cube functions, but you've now also got Power View and soon to be released, no date yet determined, but Geoflow. By the way, Geoflow can't be published to SharePoint. It's a client-only experience. Data mining is also a capability with the two add-ins for Excel. And then when it comes to sharing it, you have SharePoint. The great news about SharePoint, too, is the governance story, that it can be audited and controlled. Power Pivot has a complete module that allows IT to understand usage, server resources, data refresh failures that are happening within Power Pivot, so they can keep a close eye on what your business users are deploying and promoting. Ultimately, all this delivers BI to the masses, and that's hopefully the story that you get to take away with you today. All right, just to be aware, there's some fantastic labs on offer at the event this week, a number of my demonstrations were based on them. And I do that without shame because I wrote those labs. So if you want to go deeper into some of the experiences, like I think Data Explorer is there, Power Pivot, working with Power View, optimizing a model for Power View, there are some great hands-on labs that you can experience. In addition, there are a number of breakout sessions as well that will go into deeper with Data Explorer. I'm not sure if that's happened already this week. Does anyone know? You'll have the product team actually talk directly to you about that, and they'll go into much more advanced scenarios of what you can achieve than the basic demonstration that I had. Okay, so I hope that that prepares you for what you can do self-service or to promote within your business. Thank you very much for your time and attendance. Thank you. Very, very important for us that we get evaluations. It lets us know if we're on track with meeting your expectations, so please, please take the effort to go ahead and submit an evaluation. And we should